takes one to know one, and I know you. The little tear through your smiles I see through. You've been hurt and you're frightened, you're so blue. It takes one to know one, and I know you. It takes one to know one, and I know you.
Different worlds, dear, that's why we're so far apart. You made your world out of vows that were broken. I build a world in my heart. Everyone here tried to warn me that you were playing a game. I told them all we were meant for each other. I thought the worlds were the same. Live in two different worlds, dear, that's why we're so far apart. You made your world out of vows that were broken. I build a world in my heart. Someday when your memories wander, won't you come over in mine? We live in two different worlds, dear, that's why we're so far apart. You made your world out of vows that were broken. I build a world in my heart. So far apart. You made your world out of vows that were broken. I build a world in my heart.
In 1975, Tony Rice put out a record called California Autumn, and from that you're listening to the Beaumont Rag while I tell you about those three songs you just heard here on the Black Diamond Show. Back at the beginning of the set from back in 1964, you heard the Kentucky Colonels doing There Ain't Nobody Gonna Miss Me When I'm Gone, and they attributed that to Mr. Jimmy Martin, and he's who came up next. Jimmy Martin and the Sunny Mountain Boys doing It Takes One to Know One from his 1965 LP, Sunny Side of the Mountain. Yeah, that came out on Decca. Then we went to a relatively recent record from 2017, Mark Kirkendall and Bobby Hicks and the Asheville Bluegrass doing We Live in Two Different Worlds from their record Forever and a Day. Thank you.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
I want to start today with a correction. If I get something wrong, or if I'm not clear, or if I'm incomplete about something, I always try to do these at the top of the show. I have no intention of hiding the corrections on the back page, so to speak, as is often the case with newspapers or other publications. So let me get right into that. Yesterday, I did this segment about Fox News propagandist Tucker Carlson siding with Vladimir Putin and sort of writing off Ukraine, saying Ukraine isn't even a democracy, and sort of softly justifying or defending or excusing Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And I made a lot of critiques of Ukraine in that segment that are true, including that there are concerns in Ukraine about women's rights. There is corruption in Ukraine. There's a lack of true rule of law in Ukraine. Number of other concerning elements in Ukraine. But I didn't make clear that Tucker is wrong about Ukraine not being a democracy. Ukraine is a democracy, more or less, and certainly way more than Russia is. If you look at the Freedom Index, freedomhouse.org, you'll see that Ukraine is a 60 out of 100 on the Freedom Index, which is sort of a measure of democracy. Russia is a 20. So 60 puts Ukraine as partly free. 20 puts Russia as not free. So if I didn't make clear or I misstated, Ukraine is a democracy, albeit a flawed one. And Ukraine is moving in the direction of being more democratic, whereas recently Russia has moved in the direction of being less democratic. The Ukrainian president Zelensky genuinely won an election, a real election. He's in over his head, for sure. There were some problems with the election, but it was he won. He did not control the election in the way that Vladimir Putin controls elections in Russia. And so this is a correction. I didn't make that clear yesterday. Zelensky is not an authoritarian autocrat. Vladimir Putin is. And that is a crucial difference between Russia and Ukraine. It doesn't resolve any other issue. It doesn't excuse the things that are not OK in Ukraine. But I appreciate the opportunity to make that correction. Yesterday, President Joe Biden spoke to the nation again about the situation in Russia and Ukraine, with Vladimir Putin invading Ukraine on the premise that, hey, we've got to keep the peace in these independent regions that I've recognized as independent, even though they're in another country. And we already talked yesterday about why that entire framing doesn't make any sense. It violates a number of different international protocols. But the latest is, well, what is Joe Biden going to do? And Joe Biden is in a politically difficult situation because no matter what he does, the right is going to criticize him. The right is criticizing Joe Biden. So let's go back. First, the right attacked Biden when it came to Russia, saying we should want to be friends with Russia. We don't want conflict with Russia. We don't want war with Russia. Fine. OK. But insisting that Biden would be too harsh on Russia, whereas Trump was more friendly and open. Yeah, we know. Then very quickly, the right shifted to saying Trump would have been harsher with Russia. So Putin never would have tried this if Trump was still president. Biden is being too weak with Russia. But then at the same time, they're sort of defending what Vladimir Putin is doing, saying, Putin seems to be going to places where they want him in Ukraine. We'll get to that later, and kind of defending what Vladimir Putin is doing. And at the same time, they are saying, well, the sanctions that Biden is putting on Russia are not nearly strict enough. So they want all sides of this. I want to just speak clearly to you. Joe Biden has put in place some sanctions, and we're going to talk about those. Here is Biden yesterday making it clear that this is an invasion by Vladimir Putin. Take a look.
The last few months, we've coordinated closely with our NATO allies and partners in Europe and around the world to prepare that response. We've said all along, and I've told Putin to his face more than a month ago, that we would act together. And the moment Russia moved against Ukraine, Russia has now undeniably moved against Ukraine by declaring these independent states. So today, I'm announcing the first tranche of sanctions to impose costs on Russia in response to their actions yesterday. These have been closely coordinated with our allies and partners and will continue to escalate sanctions if Russia escalates. We're implementing full blocking sanctions on two large Russian financial institutions, VEB and their military bank. We're implementing comprehensive sanctions on Russian sovereign debt. That means we've cut off Russia's government from Western financing. It can no longer raise money from the West and cannot trade in its new debt on our markets or European markets either. Starting tomorrow and continuing in the days ahead, we'll also impose sanctions on Russia's elites and their family members. They share in the corrupt gains of the Kremlin policies and should share in the pain as well. And because of Russia's actions, we've worked with Germany to ensure Nord Stream 2 will not, as I promised, will not move forward. As Russia contemplates its next move, we have our next move prepared as well. Russia will pay an even steeper price if it continues its aggression, including additional sanctions.
Okay, and then Joe Biden going on to say that even what he has done so far is not the full scope of what he is willing to do. Take a look.
This is the beginning of a Russian invasion of Ukraine, as he indicated and asked permission to be able to do from his Duma. So let's begin to I'm going to begin to impose sanctions in response far beyond the steps we and our allies and partners implemented in 2014. And if Russia goes further with this invasion, we stand prepared to go further as with sanctions.
So the big discussion, the serious discussion, you know, all these right-wing gutter people that are just going to criticize Biden no matter what he does, I'm not really interested in engaging with them. Let's engage with a serious criticism, which is, are these sanctions going far enough? And despite repeating that the U.S. won't send troops to Ukraine, is the U.S. basically fighting this as a proxy war? So let's take these two questions one by one. First of all, are the sanctions put in place by the United States that strict? And the answer is sort of, but not really. One of the real concerns about the very first set of sanctions was you're really just sanctioning the regions that Putin invaded. You're not really hitting Russians and Russia directly. Now, with the sanctioning of Russian banks and more Russian billionaires and their families and their assets and ability to move assets, you are more directly hitting Russia proper. But you could go a lot further. Why isn't Biden doing it? Well, you'd have to ask him why he's not doing it. But it makes sense that you've got to keep something on the table, rather, in case Putin goes further, because there is speculation at this point. And so far, most of the speculation has been borne out to be accurate in terms of what Putin has done so far. There's speculation that Putin's ambitions are greater than the Donetsk and Luhansk regions that so far he has sent troops to. If Putin wants to push further into Ukraine, up to and including the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv, and wants to try to effect regime change, installing a puppet government, who knows what Putin's ambitions are, you need to leave something more on the table. Geopolitically and from a foreign relations standpoint, it makes sense you don't do everything yet because you suspect Putin has not done everything yet. So we are getting to harsher sanctions. And it is logical to not go fully out because you've got to be able to bring down more if and when Vladimir Putin pushes further into Ukraine. Now, on the proxy war question, I think we just have to accept at this time that the U.S. is waging a proxy war against Russia. Now, sometimes by proxy war, we mean both parties are using proxies. In this case, it is Russia pushing into Ukraine and the U.S. using NATO sanctions and arming of Ukraine and supporting Ukraine as a proxy to fighting Russia directly. And proxy wars are not objectively good or bad, but we have to recognize that while Joe Biden has said we're not going to put boots on the ground, we're not using drones, and at least for the time being, we're not doing cyber attacks on Russia, we are engaged in a sort of war here. And that is not an endorsement or a criticism, but it is a reality. And that is something that we're going to discuss more on tomorrow's program. If you thought it was wild and unprecedented when Donald Trump attacked his own former Vice President Mike Pence for not trying to overturn an election that he lost, that is nothing compared with what Donald Trump did yesterday. Clearly enamored with Vladimir Putin. And remember, Trump has said he has fallen in love with dictators before.
And then we fell in love.
Right. Okay. That was about Kim Jong-un. Trump, enamored with Vladimir Putin, yesterday called genius Putin's invasion of Ukraine, using the pretext of recognizing the independence of those two regions, smart and savvy. Guys, Trump is in love. Trump is in love. He loves Putin and he loves the invasion. Trump appeared yesterday on the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show. I don't know what that is, but Trump clearly doing lots of right wing shows. And here is what he had to say. And he's just smitten with Vladimir Putin.
We know Russia has said that they are recognizing two breakaway regions of Ukraine. And now this White House is stating that this is an invasion. That's a strong word. What went wrong here? What has the current occupant of the Oval Office done that he could have done differently?
Well, what went wrong was a rigged election.
So first of all, there is no question that Trump can answer without mentioning the big lie that he actually won. OK, so but let's that's not what we're going to focus today.
And what went wrong is a candidate that shouldn't be there and a man that has no concept of what he's doing. I went in yesterday and there was a television screen and I said, this is genius. Putin declares a big portion of the Ukraine, of Ukraine. Putin declares it as independent. Oh, that's wonderful. So Putin is now saying it's independent, a large section of Ukraine. I said, how smart is that? And he's going to go in and be a peacekeeper.
He is smitten. Now, some of you have pointed out Trump sort of seems to be using a tone that suggests he recognizes the cynical nature of what Putin is doing. And I agree. I agree. Trump sees what Putin is doing, but he still is so impressed. I'm not saying he likes it, but he's so impressed with how Putin has done this.
That's the strongest peace force. We could use that on our southern border. That's the strongest peace force I've ever seen. There were more army tanks than I've ever seen. They're going to keep peace, all right. No, but think of it. Here's a guy who's very savvy. I know him very,
very savvy.
Very well. Very, very well. By the way, this never would have happened with us had I been in office. Not even thinkable. This would never have happened. But here's a guy that says, you know, I'm going to declare a big portion of Ukraine independent. He used the word independent. And we're going to go out and we're going to go in and we're going to help keep peace. You got to say that's pretty savvy.
So Trump, of course, an undertone of what Putin is doing, I would not have allowed to happen. But he is just in love with Vladimir Putin. Can you imagine what Fox News and the other Republicans would be doing if Biden or some other Democratic leader called what Putin was doing genius, smart, savvy? Trump is basically saying Putin is super smart and this is all genius. And it never would have happened if I was in the White House. But it is incredible that this guy was so brilliant that he was able to do this. And by the way, with a lot of these right wingers, it is incredible how they are very soft on the violation of Ukraine's border integrity by Russia, while saying, oh, my God, when it comes to the U.S.-Mexico border, we've got to have a border. We've got to enforce it. There is nothing more sacrosanct than the U.S.-Mexico border. But the Ukraine-Russia border, it's sort of up to Putin's opinion where that should be. Incredible. This guy just loves these authoritarian, dictatorial autocrats. And you can hear it in his voice. You can hear it in his voice. There's a little bit of sarcasm, and there's a little bit of like, wow, what, how audacious. But it is a guy who is genuinely impressed with the things Vladimir Putin is doing. It's not a surprise. It's not a surprise. If you're hearing something different in Trump's voice there, let me know. You can find me on Twitter at @dpacman. The David Pakman Show is an independent, viewer and listener supported program. I would love for you to sign up at joinpakman.com. We do a lot for our members, including producing a daily additional show for you called The Bonus Show. Alex Jones hates The Bonus Show.
Oh, The Bonus Show, where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Right. He even calls it predatory.
That is a frickin' predator right there.
Right. If there is any better endorsement of The Bonus Show, it's that Alex Jones is so angry about it. And you can sign up at joinpakman.com. You'll also get The Daily Show 6 hours before everybody else with no commercials. So there are many perks to membership at joinpakman.com. Let's continue cataloging and evaluating some of the different reactions from right-wing figures to the invasion of Ukraine by Russian President Vladimir Putin over the last few hours. And things are changing so rapidly that it is hard to say this is where things are right now. But at least over the last few hours, we have not learned of any further push into Ukraine. So far, Vladimir Putin has recognized separatists in the Donetsk and Luhansk regions as independent, and then sent troops in to keep the peace on the basis that these are now independent separatists who want to be part of Russia. Donald Trump, on a podcast interview we played last segment, thought that it was genius, savvy, and smart. Donald Trump also put out a written statement about what is going on in Russia-Ukraine. And as usual, it is riddled with the same contradictions and confusions that we have seen from Donald Trump for a long time. I will read it to you. Donald Trump publishing this yesterday. Quote, if properly handled, there was absolutely no reason that the situation currently happening in Ukraine should have happened at all. I know Vladimir Putin very well, and he would have never done during the Trump administration what he is doing now. No way. Now, missing in that there's already a lot to analyze there. And I know that it's easy to just see the things Trump says and kind of write them off as the rantings of a lunatic, and that you would not be wrong to do that. But when he says Putin never would have done this during the Trump administration, what Trump wants you to believe is that Putin was scared of Trump, and so he never would have tried this during the Trump administration. The problem with that is twofold. Number one, Trump and the right's whole attitude to Putin during the Trump administration was, we should be nice to Putin, not that we should be tough with Putin. So Trump's idea that Putin wouldn't have done this during the Trump administration because Trump's so tough goes directly counter to the narrative they were giving us, which is Trump is friendly and correct to be friendly with Vladimir Putin. That's number one. The second piece is, it's possible, let's imagine that Trump is right. Putin would never even have thought of this during the Trump administration. One possible reason why Putin would not have thought of, would not think of doing this during the Trump administration would be that he feels as though he doesn't need to, because the world attitude to Putin is much more friendly thanks to Trump. And one foreign policy analysis, one section of foreign policy analysis about why Putin is doing this now is, well, with Trump gone and Biden here, the global community is more hostile to Russia when it comes to NATO expansion, when it comes to whatever, Nord Stream, etc. And so Putin feels he needs to do something. So I'm not saying any one of these analyses is the right one, but there are many reasons why Trump could be, in a literal sense, correct, that misstate the reasons behind it. OK, let's continue. Back to the quote. Russia has become very, very rich during the Biden administration, with oil prices doubling and soon to be tripling and quadrupling. Now, Trump is trying to link Biden to gas prices going up. And of course, gas prices, oil prices, rather, started going up during the Trump administration due to the resurgence in demand as COVID started to wane, or at least we thought it was starting to wane. And so that increase started under Trump and it simply continued under Joe Biden. Presidents have very little that they can do about gas prices and oil prices. There's a strategic petroleum reserve. We've talked about that. But it is not even fair to say that it is related to Biden. But Donald Trump wants you to think that it is. Lastly, the weak sanctions are insignificant relative to taking over a country and a massive piece of strategically located land. So here Trump is acting tough. Now it has begun. Oil prices are going higher and higher. Putin is not only getting what he always wanted, but getting, because of the oil and gas surge, richer and richer. The U.S. was energy independent under the Trump administration. We actually still are. We did that story Monday. An independence we never had before. Oil prices would have remained low. Now what a mess our country is in. So just about everything Trump is saying there is wrong, lie, or deceptive, and it should be interpreted as such. But the biggest sort of most obvious hypocrisy from the right at this point in time is they were always talking about we shouldn't be super tough with Russia. Democrats want us to have a bad relationship. They want to be strict. They want to sanction. They want to be tough. And at the same time, now they're saying, well, Biden's not being tough enough. And we talked about the sanctions earlier. I do think early they were weak. They are getting tougher. I also think you need to leave something on the table in case Putin does push further into Ukraine. We discussed that earlier. But Trump's foreign policy analysis worth basically what we paid for it, which is nothing. Let's move on now to some other right wing figures who were just gushing or defending or very impressed with Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And it is absolutely fascinating to see how the standards that the right demands be applied to the U.S.-Mexico border, the very same right ignores in the context of Putin ignoring the sovereignty of Ukrainian borders, even though there are numerous accords that say actually Russia has to respect the Ukrainian borders. And you really have to see this to believe it. Yesterday, we looked at clips from the day before in which Tucker Carlson softly defended Putin's invasion by saying Ukraine's not even really a democracy, and ignoring the fact that when it came to the U.S.-Mexico border, Tucker sang a very different tune. Well, now we have more examples. Candace Owens now says, listen, if we just listen to Putin, we'd know that this is actually not really Putin's wrongdoing. Candace Owens tweeting yesterday, quote, I suggest every American who wants to know what's actually going on in Russia and Ukraine read this transcript of Putin's address. As I've said for months, NATO, under direction from the United States, is violating previous agreements and expanding eastward. We are at fault. Now, multiple things there. OK, first of all, Candace Owens is saying, just read the transcript. She's basically saying, listen to. But if you don't speak Russian, you have to read a translated transcript. Just listen. If you want to know the truth, listen to what Putin said two nights ago. Anybody who saw that and had a transcript with them that they read along, which I did, should immediately recognize that it was a confused, disheveled, all over the place Putin rambling nonsensically and completely failing to justify in any legal or moral way his invasion of Ukraine. But Candace Owens is saying, just listen to what the authoritarian said and take him at his word, and then you'll understand what's going on. That's number one. Number two, I've already told you, they are falsely repeating this idea that NATO is violating agreements by expanding eastward. I've already talked to you guys about this, and you can go back and look at my clip from last week about this. It is not true. It is not true that NATO had committed to not expand eastward. There was initially a verbal discussion made during negotiations decades ago about NATO not expanding eastward and not ever considering adding Ukraine. Those were never codified and they were removed before anything was signed. Now, we can have a reasonable conversation about, if you're Russia, do you consider the eastward expansion of NATO and the consideration of maybe someday Ukraine will be part of NATO. If you're Russia, could you consider that a form of aggression? Sure, we can have. That's absolutely something we can do. But this idea that NATO is just in the wrong here, there was an agreement. There was no such agreement. Next, let's go to Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk sort of also softly runs interference for Putin by saying, I don't know, guys. I mean, maybe it's an invasion, maybe it's not. But they seem to kind of be welcoming Putin there.
Why does Putin feel so empowered? The entire Western world is putting sanctions right now on Russia, as they call this an invasion. Very well might be. I'm not the person to determine whether or not this is an invasion or an annexation. It feels as if Putin is going into places that want him. They have voted overwhelmingly to be part of it. It's a family dispute that we shouldn't get in the midst of, that's for certain. But why does Putin feel as if now's the perfect time?
Right.
Well, he definitely waited for the Olympics to be over for all the cheaters on his team that weren't even on the Russian Federation team. It was the Russian Olympic Committee to be over with. He didn't want the spectacle in the midst of the Olympics. He did annex Crimea after the Olympics in 2006 or 2010. He has a tendency to do this right after the Olympics or make big moves after that.
That was 2014.
Actually, Georgia was after the Olympics. We'll get those dates figured out. But why does Putin feel so, let's say, compelled at this particular moment to move? Why even get close to this? So in a time when the entire planet is locked down due to the Chinese coronavirus, finally the world is reopening, there's one number in particular that Vladimir Putin is looking at that his entire economy is organized behind, and that is the petrodollar.
Okay. So consider that Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA has been ranting for years about Mexico must respect our borders. They are our borders. They are internationally valid. They must be respected. But Putin doesn't have to respect Ukraine's borders, even though there are actual agreements saying you have to respect Ukraine's borders. Come on, guys. Come on. And then lastly, here's sort of a bonus. This is Fox and Friends. Fox and Friends actually, they admit Putin is doing a bad boy, but they say it's Joe Biden's fault.
Putin is calling those troops peacekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
That's the phrase
under the
he's
guise
using.
Of peacekeepers.
One man's invader is another man's peacekeeper. But these two breakaway regions have been disputed for 8 years. They're not really breakaway. They were taken along the same time when Crimea was taken. Mm-hmm. Also, and frankly, the reason that it's so precarious for Ukraine is even Belarus on the northern part. Mm-hmm. It's controlled by Russia. So on all
but look
on
how
three
big
sides,
that thing is.
Yeah, but they don't
Ukraine
control.
It's gigantic. It's the second biggest country in that part of the world.
The breadbasket. And those Donbass region has huge energy resources, manufacturing resources. It's been coveted by Vladimir Putin. And if you listen to what he said, I mean, the words he used in that speech were no different than any other autocrat of the Soviet Union.
True. I mean, so far, they're basically right here.
That's what he wants to
reestablish. He's got one playbook. And he's going to it again. The yep. Putin playbook. He's done this before when he went into when everything happened with Georgia back
in
the day.
The experts are wondering if he's going to stop with these regions, and they worry he wants to go farther and farther and then eventually take over the Black Sea. China and Taiwan are watching. He knows how Biden handled Afghanistan. That was a disaster.
Ah.
He also lost two embassies. He's lost the Afghanistan embassy, and now the Ukrainian embassy has moved to Poland. When he was vice president, Benghazi happened. And even we know that
that's why this is happening, guys. It's because Benghazi happened when Biden was VP and Biden left Afghanistan. So now that's why Putin is doing this. So no matter what, this is either something that's fine or it's something that's not fine and it's Joe Biden's fault. That's the analysis from right-wing media. We'll have these clips on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. So we knew that at some point, Kyle Rittenhouse, riding high on the heroism of his not guilty verdict, as per the right, after he killed a couple of people, would somehow come back and be used by the right in some way that maybe he would understand and maybe he would not understand. But he was going to become a tool of the right, at least until his celebrity sort of runs out. It already may be running out, actually, because he has now started an organization that no one seems to care about. And he barely seems to even understand what it is about. So we're going to look at a clip, and you almost start to feel bad for the kid because he's just getting used. He doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know, you know, down from up and day from night. Newsweek reports Kyle Rittenhouse launches a fund to finance lawsuits targeting media lies. Even that is more coherent than how Rittenhouse explained it to Tucker Carlson on his program, which we're going to get to in a moment. This is a new donation fund where you can donate and then they will hold accountable media outlets and individuals. It's called the Media Accountability Project. And I guess what it will be used to do is to finance lawsuits. Now, I'm going to play for you I'm going to play for you a clip of Kyle Rittenhouse being interviewed by Tucker Carlson on Monday night. And Rittenhouse seems to have no idea what's going on. I mean, just absolutely no clue what this even is. At one point, he nervously drinks water and looks off camera. He seems confused. And Tucker Carlson is like trying to help him almost explain what it is that he's doing. And so we can come to only a couple of conclusions, one of which is he has no idea what they're doing. Or number two, he's in way over his head. All right, let's take a look.
Forward. Kyle, thanks so much for coming on tonight. I can't think of many people who've been at the receiving end of this much sinister lying from so-called news organizations
right.
as you have. How are you going to respond?
Well, Tucker, thank you for having me.
Of course.
Me and my team have decided to...
By the way, he has a team now. That's even... I would love to know who is on his team that's advising him.
Launched the Media Accountability Project as a tool to help fundraise and hold the media accountable for the lies they said and deal with them in court.
Wow, Kyle, that's really something. Tell us more, please.
Interesting. So the idea is maybe like the Covington Catholic kids, you will be.
And if you're watching, you just saw him in a panicked way look off camera. Okay.
Suing news organizations that maliciously lie about people who are in the news.
Right.
Is that the plan?
Yes, sir. We're going to be holding them accountable, Tucker.
Do you.
He has no idea what he's doing. And, you know, we're laughing at it because it's impossible, you know, to avoid laughing. But we really should almost like feel bad that now he's clearly being taken advantage of. And it's not even clear whether if you donate money to this Media Accountability Project, TMAP, the Media Accountability Project, it's not even clear the money really will be used for lawsuits. I mean, remember, this is a very common right wing grift, which is Trump did it after the 2020 election. Trump said, hey, I need your help. I need you to donate. I need you to donate so that we can fund recounts and legal challenges and flip some states. And if you looked at the fine print, at least half the money was not even potentially going to be used for that. And of course, they didn't do the recounts. They didn't do any of it. You gave Trump money and Trump did what he wanted with the money. And it very well could be a similar thing here. But in terms of Rittenhouse clearly being taken advantage of, he doesn't have any idea what they're doing. He doesn't know how they're going to be doing it. He doesn't know how any of this stuff works. And I am not ignoring the irony that Fox here, Tucker by bringing on Kyle, is promoting someone who says, I want to hold the media accountable for lying, when it is Fox News that for over a year has welcomed liars about the 2020 election and COVID and vaccines. It is Fox News who arguably should be held accountable. And that irony, I mean, it's not that it's lost on Tucker. It's just completely missing even from any notion of a consideration that he might have. And so this is the latest scam. And Kyle Rittenhouse at the end of the day is probably being used. I don't think he knows what's going on. You know, the right loves to say Biden doesn't have any idea what's going on. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know what he's actually signing. Kyle Rittenhouse has no clue what this is about. And if he were actually subjected to real questioning here, it would get very bad. And at the end of the day, he's basically a kid. I guess legally he's an adult now. I think now he's 18. But this is basically a clueless kid being lionized because he got away with killing a couple people, and now is being used even further to try to push the goals that he barely understands of people who are using his, what I think is going to be ultimately short-lived fame. We want to hopefully be done with this question of, is the former president Donald Trump going to be able to hide records, phone records and other records from the lead up to and the immediate aftermath of the January 6th, 2021 Trump riots? The Supreme Court is now rejecting Donald Trump's bid to hide the riot records. Is this finally going to be the end? I really hope so. First of all, remember the context. This is about riot records being provided to the January 6th House committee that is investigating the Trump riots. ABC News, or CBS News rather, reports the Supreme Court on Tuesday turned away former President Donald Trump's legal fight with the White House, with the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th assault on the U.S. Capitol, bringing an end, we can only hope, bringing an end to the former president's quest to stop investigators from accessing reams of documents from his final weeks in the White House. Trump asked the Supreme Court in December to take up his appeal of a decision from the Federal Appeals Court in Washington, D.C., which rejected his efforts to shield the documents from lawmakers and found Trump provided, quote, no basis for it to override President Biden's decision not to uphold his predecessor's claim of executive privilege over the records. In rejecting the former president's request, the decision from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit remains in place. In addition to asking the Supreme Court to review the lower court's decision, Trump requested the justices stop the transfer of records from the National Archives to House investigators. They declined to do so last month, and the Select Committee received more than 700 pages of records sought by the panel earlier this month. So is this finally the end? I really hope so, because I am so sick of this. He was president. Those are our records. These are not Trump's documents to control. These are our records, and they should go to the committee investigating this. And of course, you are innocent until proven guilty. Trump has not been charged with anything. He gets an opportunity for all of that stuff. In a colloquial setting like this, which is not a court of law, this is just a show, one would naturally wonder, why would you be so anxious for those records not to become public if you have nothing to hide? Now, there are two explanations, and I want to be fair. One explanation is he has something to hide. That's a completely reasonable, colloquial explanation we might all come to without saying that means he is legally guilty of anything. He has stuff to hide. Fine. The other one, and it could be this, is that it's a really effective legal strategy. You always push back and you always obstruct everything, even really simple requests, uncontroversial requests, even if later it'll be revealed there was no criminal wrongdoing there or whatever. And that makes it harder to figure out when is Trump really being sketchy and really has something to hide. And what I mean by that is, imagine that there were 10 requests made of Donald Trump, and Trump's really only concerned about one of those requests, and that's the only one that he fights. You're telegraphing where investigators should really be paying attention. You're signaling where is the wrongdoing really hidden. If there are 10 requests made and you're only worried about one of them, but you try to obstruct all 10, you are making it more difficult to determine which of these 10 things should we really be focusing on. And so I think that it's completely plausible that that's just the legal strategy here. And that's why Donald Trump is doing this. In terms of Trump's willingness to put records out there, remember that he was just about to publish those tax returns back in 2015 and then 2016, as soon as the IRS audit was done. And we never got those tax records. So we know he never has any intention of publishing anything. Last thought. Imagine being an adult and seeing Trump's behavior, forget about during his presidency, but just over the last year since he's been out of office, and still being impressed with him and thinking that he's an alpha and thinking that he's smart and a good business person and a good decision maker. It says almost more about the people that still support the guy than it does about Trump himself. Send me your thoughts. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/David Pakman Show. After this break, we're going to hear from Merrick Garland and much more. Okay, so one of the questions for like a year, I guess, but particularly in the last 3 to 4 months is what is happening at the Justice Department under the stewardship of Attorney General Merrick Garland? Why is there not investigation, criminal investigation going on of at least some of the things that former President Donald Trump did? We have now received confirmation from the Attorney General Merrick Garland that the Justice Department indeed received information about the classified records found among the documents recovered from Trump's Mar-a-Lago, and that the Justice Department is looking into it. Now, this colloquially means that they are investigating. Whether this would technically be called an open criminal investigation is a question mark. NPR reporting, Attorney General Merrick Garland said the Justice Department is aware that classified material has been found on Trump's Mar-a-Lago property, but didn't explicitly confirm a federal probe is underway. Let's take a look at the video clip. This is during a press conference. The audio is not great, but I think we will be able to make out what's being said.
Question. Last week, the National Archives revealed that it found classified information in 15 boxes of documents stored at Mar-a-Lago. Is the Justice Department investigating to determine how that classified information got there and who might have accessed it?
So as the archivist said in a letter that was sent to the Congress, the National Archives has informed the Justice Department of this and communicated with it. And we will do what we always do under these circumstances, look at the facts and the law and take it from there.
So, you know, he's using very careful language. He says, we have received the information and we are going to do what we always do. We're going to look at the facts and we're going to look at the law. Now, I think he's being very careful here. He is not saying we have opened a federal investigation, because that's very specific and formal language. He is saying we are investigating. And at this point, is this merely a semantic question? It may be, because I see no interest whatsoever in seriously looking at the possibility of indicting Donald Trump. I mean, I just don't see it. So the fact that he's informally saying there's an investigation without calling it a federal probe, I think, is not ultimately going to be super meaningful. Now, of course, at this point, there would be a real question for all the people who back in 2016 said, I'm not voting for Hillary, I'm voting for Trump, because Hillary can't be trusted with sensitive information. Hillary can't be trusted with classified information or emails, the private email server, et cetera, et cetera. Those people should now be saying, wow, if those were my concerns with Hillary, I never should have voted for Donald Trump. But if you actually go and talk to them, the vast majority will just excuse away this behavior and say it's not really that bad, or Trump was justified in doing it, or it's a witch hunt, or the claims are untrue, or whatever the case may be. I've even seen online some conservative they're not even really conservative, some Trumpian reactionaries saying Trump did everything right here. Trump's own people found the classified documents and called the National Archives and said, hey, guys, we've got this stuff. You should come and get it really quickly. There is no evidence that that's what took place. Right. The narrative they want to create is Trump had no idea about these documents, and Trump staff found them and immediately of their own volition called the National Archives and said, come and get the documents. Of course, there is no evidence that that is the story. But at the end of the day, I don't believe Merrick Garland has any interest in indicting a former president. And the fact that they are generally investigating without confirming an open federal probe is a distinction. But I don't think it will make a functional difference in terms of what we are to expect. If you think Garland might have an appetite for indicting Trump, let me know. I've seen no evidence to suggest that that's the case. We are getting ready for CPAC. CPAC is the Conservative Political Action Conference. Earlier in the show, And earlier in the week, I told you about some of the people that would be speaking. Donald Trump will be speaking. Donald Trump Jr. will be speaking. Kimberly Guilfoyle will be speaking. Charlie Kirk and different members of Congress. Tulsi Gabbard will be speaking, sort of a shock to some because she was a Democrat and ran as a Democrat. But of course, she's extremely reactionary and fits in much better with the Fox News crowd than with any leftists I know. She will be speaking at CPAC. So the speakers are one side of it. My colleague John pointed out to me that he was looking at the sponsors list for CPAC, and a lot of them are the usual suspects, but there's some pretty weird stuff. So, you know, if you look at the sponsors page, you see that Fox Nation is sponsoring. That's Fox News' streaming platform. You see that some of the big sponsors are the Japanese Conservative Union. That might sound weird, but that there's actually a big Trump Japan movement. The Republican National Committee is sponsoring, and you know, a whole bunch of others. You look at partnering sponsors and the Epoch Times, which are a right-wing media outlet, Getter, which is like a right-wing Twitter. They're all sponsoring. You then look at supporting sponsors, and it's a lot of the common ones, Heritage Foundation and other think tanks, Tea Party, Patriots Action, on and on. You look at contributing sponsors, and it's Turning Point USA and others. You then look at participating sponsors, and you still see some names you recognize, Right Side Broadcasting Network and others. And then you go to exhibitors, and there's a whole list of stuff that we don't really recognize. And one of them in particular caught my eye, caught John's eye, and he told me about it. And it's called Enemies Within the Church. This is just unbelievable. And we could pick any one of these and do this, but let's just look at this one. Enemies Within the Church is, I guess you would call it, a documentary film. And what they seem to be arguing is the church has now been infected with left-wing propaganda. The film, which we're going to look at the trailer of here, feels that the institution of the church is too liberal and it's basically going communist, just like they feel our colleges have. This is incredible. Who would fund this trash? Look at the trailer. Let's listen.
What happened to the church? To the living, powerful, transformative, nation-shaking Christianity?
What they're trying to do is completely demolish Western civilization. Uh-oh. And then to rebuild it in a just society.
How do you break down American Christianity?
I think the problem today in our culture is many of our words have been co-opted and stolen and dumbed down and reversed.
Social justice is sold as something that it isn't. Critical race.
This is dystopia porn over the church being too liberal. Understand that that's the core here.
Theory is sold as something that it isn't.
Whiteness has caused blindness of heart. Whiteness has caused blindness of heart.
When you preach victimization, it always leads to vengeance and vice. Us against them, me against you, I want my pound of flesh.
American churches today are where the universities were 10 years ago. Pretty heavily Marxist. They're not quite there yet, but they're well on the way. Many of the seminaries and Bible colleges are definitely already there.
That message that they're going out and taking the world is not, you need to repent of your sin, receive Christ. Instead, the message that you actually have is they are under the weight of racism or sexism or homophobia, and then we need to unify them together.
I'm gay. I'm 29. I'm a youth pastor in New Jersey.
Uh-oh, nothing more dangerous than a gay youth pastor, guys. These people are really out there. And this is the new target. The church, liberal churches, is the new enemy.
I'm straight, and I'm also a youth pastor in New Jersey.
We're planning on sharing life together for the rest of our lives, which we're not totally sure what that looks like. Obviously, Nick is straight, and he does plan on getting married. When he has a wife one day, she'll make those decisions with us.
The future damage of what we're doing now is just going to be enormous.
The entire fabric of family, personal wealth, private property, all those things are out the door.
Now, understand that when you stake out the position that college, nope, college is liberal indoctrination. You send your kids to college, it's going to be a real problem there. Can't do it. Regular elementary school. No. Kids are being taught about slavery. And you got to homeschool, Christian homeschooling. Church. Well, church is fine, right? That's the safe place for this idea. No, the churches are becoming Marxist, social justice places. And though you got to keep your kids out of that. They are going in the direction of the only place that's okay is some small cult-like enclave that is quite frankly reminiscent of Jim Jones, right? The drink the Kool-Aid people at the end of the day. That's what they are building here. You're only safe in your little cult. Even the church is dangerous now.
And everything is the state. They believe the state is God.
They don't define justice the same way as the scripture.
Oh, no. It's going to be an equality, all right. And it's going to be a totalitarian Marxist justice.
So that's just, and again, we could look at a ton of these. That's one spot, exhibitor at CPAC. The people who feel churches are become, and they use all sorts of communist imagery there as well. If you were just listening, the church has become a communist, Marxist, social justice entryway into dangerous leftism, according to these folks. Now, the funny thing is, if this actually had the effect of weakening the lobbying power of churches, it might actually be a good thing. The problem is what they're advocating is get out of those churches, come to the right churches, make sure they remain fully funded, etc. We're going to be covering CPAC and it's going to be insane. The sponsors are insane. The exhibitors are radical. It's all crazy. But as I said yesterday, we don't have this level of organization on the left. We just don't. And we need it. And part of why the country keeps going to the left, but they keep winning elections, is because they have this level of organization. They have this level of funding. And it's not at some point it will hurt the left. It is hurting the left. It has hurt the left for a very long time. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 2192-DAVID-P. Here is a very fair question about electric vehicles. Let's take a listen.
Hey, David, I just have a question about electric cars. I'm all for it. The only thing is that electricity still is produced with coal and natural gas and fossil fuels.
True.
So how is it that it's going to save anything? Because I feel like what we're doing is removing the fuel from the actual car just to a power plant in someone's neighborhood. Hopefully there's a better answer.
Thanks. There is. So here's the deal. First of all, it is not true that all electricity comes from fossil fuels, but most electricity still does come from fossil fuels, although it is diminishing in the United States. I've spoken to energy activists and technologists about this exact issue. You plug in the electric car. Great. The car drives around and there's no emissions, but that electricity came from fossil fuels. First of all, you can power electric vehicles with renewably sourced electricity. I have solar panels, and then I've got the electric car. So it's coming from the sun. Now, the solar panels have some of a carbon footprint. That's true. They were manufactured and they were shipped, but it is lower. But you can power electric vehicles with renewables. You can generate electricity with solar and wind. You've also got non-renewable but more efficient geothermal, new safe nuclear. I'm not a pro-nuclear activist, but I recognize that if we built new nuclear now, it would not be like what there was 50 years ago. Okay, fine. We don't even need to get into it. Most of the electricity is not coming from renewables, but you can get electricity from renewables. So if you're driving around in a gas-powered car, you're burning fuel. And as more electricity comes from renewables, you're still driving around in a gas-powered car. There's no way to make the gas-powered car renewable. If you have the electric car, as electricity transitions away from fossil fuels, more and more vehicle miles are being powered by renewable energy. Okay, that's number one. Second, even if electricity is coming from, say, some kind of fossil fuel, if the fossil fuel is all being burned in one place rather than coming out of a million vehicle tailpipes, you still have a better chance at figuring out how to capture the emissions from those fossil fuels all at the power plant, rather than having to figure out what to do with a million different tailpipes that are driving around. So you're kind of just pushing up the energy ladder. You're obviously completely right that right now most electricity still does come from fossil fuels, but it doesn't have to. And more importantly, that's going to transition over time. That's the answer. You know, we've interviewed energy experts on this, and I've spoken to them personally, and that's essentially the way it works. The transition that we need to keep pushing is for more and more electricity. And this is, by the way, the same reason that if you have an electric oven, once the electricity comes from a renewable, you've closed the loop. If you have a gas oven, no matter what, you're burning fossil fuels. And that's a lot of the reason why one of the big moves right now in renewable energy is let's start retrofitting an entire, go building by building. You put solar panels on the roof, you put in an electric heat pump, mini split type system for heating, you put in an electric oven, it's now, and you put in a car charger, and then you plug in your car. You've now gone from the roof to the garage, so to speak, on electric, and it can come from renewable energy. So that's why there's so much focus on that right now. We have a great bonus show for you today. New York, as the pandemic wanes, wants to get people riding the subway again. One of the reasons a lot of people aren't going back to the New York subways is because there are lots of people living in the subways, and there are more incidents of sucker punches and people being pushed in front of trains that are being reported on. I don't know if it's happening more, but it's being reported on it more. And New York City wants to deal with that. But how are they going to deal with that? Is it going to be oppressive? We're going to talk about that. Number two, Democrats have again introduced a bill to eliminate these tax subsidies when sports teams build new stadiums. Maybe will it pass this time? We will discuss. And we have a new study that claims that when there are stand your ground laws enacted, homicides go up 11%. Not justifiable uses of guns for self-defense. Legal homicides, illegal homicides, go up 11%. We're going to talk about that on the bonus show. All of those stories and more are at your fingertips when you sign up at joinpacman.com. You can use the code WOW22 on our website to get a discount.
DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet, because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh. 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Hello, my.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
To start in Europe what could be the worst war since the beginning of the century.
Russia has launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine by attacking it from the north, east, and south, prompting widespread condemnation and the threat of new sanctions. Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered the invasion early this morning from Moscow.
I decided to conduct a special military operation. It aims to protect people who have been bullied and subjected to genocide by the Kiev regime for 8 years.
We'll get the latest on the Russian invasion, then look at the looming humanitarian crisis in Ukraine with Jan Egeland of the Norwegian Refugee Council. Plus, we speak with former Greek finance minister Yanis Varoufakis of the Progressive International about what the Russian invasion means for Europe. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Russia's military has launched an invasion of Ukraine. Overnight explosions rocked the capital, Kyiv, with reports of shelling, missile strikes, and gunfire across Ukraine, which has also come under an intense cyber attack. Ukraine's government says some 40 Ukrainian soldiers and 10 civilians have been killed so far, including 18 reportedly killed in a missile attack on Ukraine's southern Odessa region. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has declared martial law, saying his government will hand out weapons to everyone who's willing and able to defend Ukraine's sovereignty. The invasion came just moments after Russian President Vladimir Putin said in a nationally televised address he'll intervene to help pro-Russia separatists in eastern Ukraine's Donetsk and Luhansk regions.
I decided to conduct a special military operation. It aims to protect people who have been bullied and subjected to genocide by the Kiev regime for 8 years. For that, we will strive for demilitarization and denazification of Ukraine and will bring to justice those who committed multiple bloody crimes against civilians, including Russian citizens.
Russia's invasion began as the United Nations Security Council met in an emergency session last night to discuss tensions in Ukraine. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemned Russia's aggression as, quote, the saddest moment in my tenure, he said.
President Putin, in the name of humanity, bring your troops back to Russia. In the name of humanity, do not allow to start in Europe what could be the worst war since the beginning of the century.
President Biden's meeting with G7 counterparts today to map out more severe measures against Russia, including new sanctions. In Paris, officials lit up City Hall overnight with the blue and yellow colors of Ukraine's flag. In Berlin, German officials lit the Brandenburg Gate in similar fashion. After headlines, we'll have the latest on Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the world's response. The drug makers Sanofi and GSK said on Wednesday they'll request emergency use authorization for their COVID-19 vaccine from European and U.S. regulators. The companies say the Sanofi-GSK vaccine showed 100% efficacy at preventing severe disease and hospitalization in a late-stage clinical trial and 58% efficacy against symptomatic disease. Sanofi and GSK received billions of dollars from Operation Warp Speed, the Trump administration's initiative to fast-track vaccine development. The World Health Organization says it's opening a global biomanufacturing hub in South Korea to train people in low- and middle-income countries to